Good afternoon, everybody. This is Kevin Moore. I am joined by the fabulous, as always, Susan Stuth, and then also in the background, Mr. Buddy Young. How is everybody doing?
Doing great.
Doing well.
All right. Mr. Speed is on the Financial Friends cruise to Sarah Palin's house up in Alaska, so he will not be joining us. Evidently, they're going to have a barbecue at Sarah's house. And I think Walter's bringing Hawaiian shirts for everybody and a bottle of wine. So they're all having fun on their way up to Alaska.
He'll be able to see Russia from her front door.
There you go. We're trying to get all the puns in when we can, because when Eddie said he was going to Alaska, that's all I could think of. So, you know, thank God for Tina Fey and Saturday Night Live. So, all right. So for tonight's call, what I want to do is I want to cover three areas. So the first thing we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about the market conditions. And what I mean by that is we're going to talk about what is actually happening in the distressed note space in the market today. We hear a lot of noise about the market's recovered and it's overheating and it's blowing up and, you know, home appreciation is pre-that. Susan, I know you spend a lot of time working actively in the real estate market. Are you tired of hearing the prefix pre, where everybody keeps telling you, you know, it's recovered to pre-level this, pre-level that, blah, 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 blah? I mean, at the end of the day, you make money buying and selling houses and being in the note business, right?
Yep.
All right. And so right now, if somebody tells you, hey, that market's recovered to a pre-2006 level, what does that mean for you? Because you've got 2017 bills to pay, correct?
Right.
That's kind of how I look at it. Then what we're going to do is we're going to spend a few minutes kind of building on a conversation that we had last night about where the industry is, and in particular, where each one of you are as a note professional this year. And so we'll spend a little bit of time on that. We've got a couple slides we'll walk through. And then what we're going to do is we're going to segue in, and we're going to go into Notes Direct. And this is a live exercise. And here's what we're going to do. One of our mentoring members had made the comment that they had not bought a non-performing note this year, and that was on their to-do list. So it was on their 2017 list in terms of business goals. And they've got a budget. And so that budget, if you want to write it down, that budget is $40,000. And so what they're saying is they want to be all in with a do not exceed number of $40,000. So that would be acquisition, some workout expense, legal, et cetera, and some rehab. So that at the end of the day, they have no more than $40,000 in it. And what we're going to do is we're going to also kind of explore that from some different strategies. And so I'm going to, Buddy, I know you're one of our newer mentoring members. So I'm going to use you. I'm going to bounce some questions off you. Susan, you've been with us for a while. You've also been active, where you bought a lot of notes. Then you kind of tailed off a little bit. Now you're back active buying notes again. And so we'll kind of run this just as a board. And then always what we're going to be looking for is we're going to be looking for feedback from everybody that's on the call this evening, because the best way to learn is to talk it through. Is to have a meeting, and there's no better way at this point to actually go on Notes Direct, and we're going to go ahead and work through some price points, and at the end of the day, we're going to see if we can go ahead and put a non-performing note deal together where our all-in cost, based on what we can see, would be no more than $40,000. So, all right. So, Susan, I know I had sent over a couple of slides for you, and hopefully we've got those ordered up right, so yours match mine.
Yep.
And what I want to talk about is, everybody always asks us when we're out at the 3 days, or we get on the live calls. People are just going, "Okay, what's happening? What, you know? We heard that non-performing notes are going away, or we heard that foreclosure levels are down to the lowest. You know, foreclosure levels are pre-2005, et cetera, et cetera." So what I did is I went in, and I pulled a report from Black Knight. For those of you who aren't familiar with Black Knight, they are a data and analytics company. They focus heavily on real estate, residential mortgages, commercial real estate, commercial mortgage-backed securities, et cetera. And I like their data. It's typically laid out in very readable formats, and also when you do some fact checking on it, it's pretty good. So here's what I want to talk about. So Susan, can you kind of take your little internet highlighter and kind of circle around 2015 to 2017, and just circle those numbers? And guys, if you look at those numbers, you can see that they're all in print and rotate clockwise. I like that. So as you can see, really from about 2015 to about 2017, we're reasonably stable on the number of foreclosure starts. Always remember, in the non-performing note space, foreclosure starts don't tell you the whole picture. They tell you part of the picture. And the first thing is, always remember, just because you initiate a foreclosure, does it mean you have to complete the foreclosure? And the answer is no. So what we see is that over the past 24 months, that the foreclosure starts have been fairly measured. There's not a lot of big ebbs and flows and a lot of spikes. We also know that Fannie and Freddie, as part of their terms of their conservatorship, were told, you know what, we want foreclosure to be your last option. So hardest hit funds, everything in the TARP program, that was all put together for foreclosure avoidance, where loss mitigation would be based on, let's modify the loan, let's do workouts, principal balance reductions, let's go ahead and work to keep the borrowers in the property. So right now I'm going to tell you that if people are telling you that you know, the non-performing note space is going away, inventory is shrinking, et cetera, the answer is no, it's not going away. Everybody always likes to point back to, you know, the crazy spikes of 09, 10, 11, and 12. And it's like, guys, that right there, that was a meltdown, okay? And was it a once-in-a-lifetime event? Well, for me, I'm old, so it's probably a once-in-a-lifetime event. For people on here that are younger than me, you know, you may see another one when you're 80 or something. So let's go to the next slide. What this chart is telling you is this is showing you where the heaviest foreclosure start rate activity is. Now, if you go to the bottom and you circle down where Florida is, we know that Florida historically has been one of the most difficult states to initiate mortgage foreclosures. Over the past 18, 14, 12 months, what's happened is Florida has become, and I don't like to use this term, but it's become more foreclosure friendly, where it's easier now for lenders to foreclose. So that's why, in terms of when we look at what's happening on a geographical basis, Florida is one of the most active states now in terms of foreclosures. If you go up and you kind of go up into the East Coast, you'll see New York, New Jersey, et cetera, et cetera. Those states, too, were historically the toughest to get foreclosures initiated. The old contest used to be between Florida and New York to see who could take the longest in terms of tying up a foreclosure action in court. Now, what everybody's realized is that by delaying foreclosures, by delaying investors the ability to go into zombie properties, and, you know, where obviously it's a vacant property and there's no owners, instead of making them, you know, wait 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, they're putting rules and regulations in place to make it easier. So what this chart also is telling us is this is telling us where all the dark blue areas are, which is the heaviest foreclosure activity, where the next wave of distressed paper that's in active foreclosure is going to come from. In the kind of middle blue, and Susan, what would you call that? Aquamarine? Give me, I'm terrible with colors. To me, blue is blue. So, the less, buddy, we'd call this what? Less blue, right?
Medium
so in
blue.
the in,
That sounds good.
okay,
Less
medium. Yeah, we're less blue. We're going less blue. So what you're going to see is the states that typically represent the low value band assets, so the markets that we always tell you have got the best opportunities, you'll notice that those are the states that still have a good level of new foreclosure activity. And again, it's still pretty much kind of the Midwest, traditional Midwest, and then kind of Southeast, and also some into the Southwest. When you look at the light blue, and Buddy, since you and I kind of called the second one less blue, let's go with least blue. These areas up here, so the Pacific Northwest, California, et cetera, what that's telling us is, listen, at this point, the housing prices have recovered to a point where people have been able to work out a lot of their delinquent issues because they were able to go ahead and short sale or do a deed in lieu, or you know what, they were in the first few waves of foreclosure, and now those markets have recovered. When we tell you that a lot of times out in the northwestern states, et cetera, that there may not be as much opportunity in the non-perform space, that's why, because we track all the stats and we look at the activities to kind of help you out in terms of what's going on. All right, here we go. We're good here. All right, so Susan, let's go to the next one, please. All right. So we're not going to spend a lot of time on this chart, but the reason that I brought a snapshot in on this is because I wanted to kind of give you a visual representation without, you know, death by data, or, you know, you don't have to be somebody who's an algorithm wizard or a quant analysis, quantitative analysis. What I wanted to show you was, in 2005, 2006, 2007, those were considered to be kind of normal years for mortgage originations, where it was pre-crash. And you could see that there was always, you know, somewhere between 2.3 and 2.8 million households that were non-current. And then you could see, you could look at it, how the foreclosure numbers started creeping up. All right. Susan, take us right down to January of 2017. In January 2017, we had about 2.5, almost 2.7 million non-current mortgages. And then in terms of foreclosures, we were running at about, we were running at about 70,000. The trend, thank you. I lost my header, so now I'm flipping back and forth between the charts. What this chart shows you is, this really shows you that once we got through everything in about 2014, so once the hardest hit funds programs became more readily available, we still had some HAMP activity in terms of modifications, that everything is pretty much stabilized, and there's little ebbs and flows, but there's no sudden decrease, there's no cliff. When we tell you that we believe the market in terms of the non-performing spaces, in terms of inventory, for the next foreseeable 3, 5, 7 years, we don't see any dip in supply because of what's happened previous, this is the kind of data that we use to come up with those numbers. And the other thing is, Susan, on this one, so on the January 17, go back up to the top of the chart, and I want everybody to look at the average number of days property was delinquent before foreclosure started. And you'll see in January 17, it was almost 1,000. So this, the inventory that we see now that they're just doing fresh starts on, This is still legacy loans. These are still loans that were originated in the latter part of 2006, 2007, some of it 2008. So this chart shows you that, guys, we're still working through are still working through old inventory. Are they creating new inventory? Yes, they are. And that's where if you look at the data from May of this year, June, July, you'll see where increases are starting, and also some of the days on market, in terms of how many days they were delinquent before foreclosure activity started, you'll see that start to ebb. So let's go to the next slide, please. Did we get it? I lost you.
No, I'm here. It's taking the name away, so I'm trying to figure out which one you want next. Hold on.
Let's see. We started with 2. We went through 15. Went to 8. All right. So this is my favorite slide, and I think, Susan, if this one, can we get this slide into the archive, or maybe you're going to put all of them in? I don't know.
I can attach them.
Back in there. Sure. And this is a slide that you may want to take this and put this in your investor presentations, just when people go, well, how do you know what markets to work in? This heat map illustrates perfectly for you why the low value band space is a market to work in, because the markets that could have recovered here were now, Susan, you spend a lot of time in the real estate world, so you're always listening to Lawrence Yoon and all the NAR people and everything.
Yeah.
Do they think we're in the 8th, 9th, or 10th year of the recovery in terms of real estate?
Not sure I'm following you. I mean, they act like we're fully recovered and that there's nothing left hanging.
Okay. So if everything was full recovered, would we have a heat map that looked like this?
No.
Okay. See, I used to be a card-carrying member of NAR, and you used to pay all my dues, and Lawrence, you and I just, that guy cracks me up. He should be a politician. He's the only guy I know that can be completely wrong and still get paid the same amount of money. I like it. So, guys, the reason I want you to look at this slide is because this illustrates perfectly that, you know what, there's just parts, even after 10 years of the recovery or 9 years of the recovery, depending on who you want to talk to, that prices just haven't recovered in some markets. And so that gives us opportunity. That as investors, that allows us to better identify the markets and then also know where the deepest level of discounts are still going to be. So, all right, next slide.
You want to see the bottom of that one?
Let's see. Mark, Susan's going to put these up there. Yep. Oh, there you go.
So some just snapshot cities here.
Yep. And so you'll hear the term sometimes kind of peak to trough, et cetera, et cetera. So trough always is the bottom number. Peak is the top number. And this will show you kind of where the housing values fell, where the depreciation levels were when the market corrected. So, and I don't know, Susan, how comfortable are you with the term median home price?
I mean, it's fine. It just, you know, they use median or average typically.
All right. I always laugh. So
is this saying, for example, at the bottom on Denver, Colorado, with a little red area, that the prices have started to slide in that area?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And Houston, Portland.
Correct. So I've been watching the Denver market for 15 months. Mm-hmm. And 15 months ago, I was in a very, very lively, animated conversation with Eddie Speed and his son-in-law, Matt. Mm-hmm. And Matt says the market is going to continue to go up for at least the next 24 to 36 months. And I said, I will bet you a six-pack. I said, it is going to start declining the beginning of January 17. So he and I know, Matt's been sending us slides, and last week he sent us an article where Denver, they're starting to make price concessions on both new construction and also on existing home sales.
Yeah.
And as a realtor, if builders are making concessions on new construction, what does that tell you about the market?
Slowing down.
Yep. And so, and guys, I will keep everybody updated, and we'll go ahead and keep putting fresh slides into the archives and stuff for you, because when in June we told you, hey, listen, you don't have to believe us. There's markets that have capped. They're on their way down. They've been on their way down. People just aren't paying attention to them. Here's some proof. And this data is very recent data in terms of this data was put together, aggregated, and kind of digested as of July 31st. So this data is all, you know, not even 45 days old yet. So
yeah, Christy's saying Dallas is like up. There's no housing inventory. MLS inventory is in weeks instead of the 6-month average.
Mm-hmm. And so Christy, I love the fact that you put that in there because yep, there is still a lot of hysteria in some markets right now. And so if there is a inventory shortage, whether it's real or perceived, what happens to prices? And then what happens to rational home buying? People just go crazy. So, I mean, Susan, you work in some of your markets, you work where they are overbid markets or overasked markets, right? Where people are like, listen, how much is it? Okay, I'll give you, blank over just so they can get it. And then there's other markets where you're going, you know what, dollar for dollar, stick for stick, it's a better buy. And, you know, people aren't in the same kind of frenzy, are they, when it comes to buying?
No.
So, I was actually reading an article today on single family versus condos and how in about 80% of the MSAs that they track, condos have lagged single family housing in terms of housing house appreciation in some markets by almost 90%, which I laughed because back in 2003, 4, 5, 6, how many people were buying condos, flipping condos, and condos were going to be the next greatest thing in the marketplace, and now they're kind of last, they're last to cure. So, all right, there's moving here. No, yep, price jumped up. Yep. So let's see. Hold on a second. Where do you find these heat maps? Stu, we'll put these on the website for you. And this has all come from Black Knight Analytics. Christy, you're right. Your challenge in Dallas is you have one of the highest rates of employee inflow in the United States. I mean, even more than Silicon Valley. I mean, you guys have got, I think, every derrick and every cement truck west of the Mississippi, all in Dallas. So they've got no room at the inn. So, and no state income tax. Listen, it takes me 2 days to get out of the airport. I'll pay income tax if I can be in and out of the airport in 5 minutes. So, I live in Michigan. I can get in and out of the airport very quickly, but yes, we do have state income tax. So that's the beauty of an LLC.
She says fly Southwest. Right. I actually do fly Southwest out of Dallas, and it last time I went through there was nobody there.
That's my, I know, that's my preferred airline, but it's just once you get out and try, it takes you an hour and a half to go around the service road. How the heck to get out of there? It's poor Susan at the office. She's like, well, just get a car. I'm like, heck no. I go, I've been coming down here for 9 years, and they still haven't finished the construction around the airport. Give me to Uber. So, or they, somebody picks me up. So, all right. Okay, so then let's go ahead and let's kind of finish up. All right. So the last slide that I wanted to talk about was I wanted to also give you an accurate depiction of who is buying new construction, existing houses, et cetera, and what buyers look like. And part of this also is some of the information that I'm using for the new seller finance stuff. I've updated all the seller finance program. We'll be working on that, and at Node Expo we'll spend quite a bit of time on that, I believe, as well. But everybody keeps hearing that it's easier to get mortgages, and it's, you can get 3% down, no percent down, blah, blah, blah. If you look on the bar, on the bar graph to the right, 74% of the mortgages written in July were to people with a credit score over 720. Only about 20% of them were for people that were below 719. Even back when in the what they called the fog the mirror days, only 47% of the people had a credit score over 720. So the credit market, so the loan origination market, guys, it's as good as it's going to get. And as good as it's going to get means the banks, the paper they're originating, then they're selling to Fannie and Freddie, almost 74% of it is going to people with a credit score over 720. So why is that important to us? Because in the non-performing note space, if you end up with a property that's an REO, you're going to look at potentially carrying seller financing on a retail basis where you're going to an owner-occupant, or you may do seller financing to an investor who is going to take it, turn it into a rental, or you're going to be looking to do seller financing as a turnkey model where you rehab the house, rent it up, put a property manager in place, and then you carry part of the financing on that property as well. So, again, I just want to take a little bit of time, kind of talk about market conditions and let you know that, A, the non-performing note space is strong, it's going to continue to build momentum. There's going to be a steady supply of non-performing notes coming down the pipe just from fresh originations. We're still only about halfway through the billions and billions and billions that we accumulated from the last bubble. And regardless of what they're telling you in terms of it's easier for people to get back bank financing, the math doesn't lie. I pull these reports every month and track them just because, you know, that's what I like to do. Because I'm a paper guy. So, all right, Susan, that kind of covers that. Any questions or let's see the panel. All right, perfect. Well, let's kind of go to the next thing here.
Okay, so we're going to Notes Direct.
Let's go ahead and what is it, about 5:30?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, do me a favor. Before you do that, let's go out to the three slides, and I just want to focus on one thing.
Okay.
And still, it'll be the green and the red test tubes from last night. Okay. Last night, Susan was playing along with me where we've got Eddie's favorite picture where he's holding up the crazy green and red test tubes, and I'd asked Susan if she'd ever in her life been to an establishment that served adult beverages, and they were trying to sell her some kind of mysterious green or red test tube when she was lounging by the poolside. So she did not give up any information about any kinds of relaxation activities, but Buddy did weigh in and said he was familiar with the test tubes and the Jell-O shots. So
I did.
I've seen the Jell-O shots. He saw the test tubes.
There you go. All right.
Eddie's a world traveler, so, though.
That's right. All right, and I hope Eddie sends us a picture. I want a picture of him in that hairdo on the bow of the boat as they round the corner going to Sarah Palin's house. So, and he could be clanging the bell when Sarah were here. Next stop, Russia. So let's go ahead and go to the next slide.
You want the full thing?
Yeah, we can go full thing's fine. Okay. All right. So last night what I did is I had everybody take out a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil, and yes, we can see you at home. So if you're not doing it right now, I know you're not doing it, and we will reach out to you after the call. And what I did is I started the conversation with take out a piece of paper and a pencil, and I want you to write down if you have accomplished your 2017 business goals in terms of the note space, and whether it's performing notes or non-performing notes or creating turnkey rentals or a combination of one, two, or three. I wanted you to just write down the word yes or no. And then underneath it, I wanted you to write down why, so W-Y-H. And then just kind of look at that and go, all right, so if I haven't accomplished my goals, you know, why? And typically what you'll find is a very simple answer will pop up. And the reason for that question was it's now September. We're in the last quarter of the year. We're in the home stretch. And if you haven't hit your goals, let us know why. Reach out to content, reach out to liaison desk, let us know what we can help you with. And last night, one of the things that kind of popped up was the overarching response was implementation, implementation, implementation. And so what we're going to do is we're going to kind of look at the niches, and for this call, we're just going to focus on the non-performing business. And then we'll go in, we're going to do our exercise in terms of we've got a budget, and let's see if there's inventory to buy on Notes Direct in terms of a non-performing note that fits the budget. And we'll go from there, and then we'll wrap this up with, okay, how if I answered yes, that I have not accomplished my goals for 2017, what's the roadblock? And last night I made the reference that, you know what, guys, every successful business person, athletes that operate at high levels, et cetera, they've got a coach. They've got somebody who they're not always taking what they're doing and throwing into the garbage can and start from scratch. What they're doing, they're just tweaking things. They're, if you play golf, change your grip a little bit. Or if you play tennis, hold your racket at a different angle or throw the ball higher. If you're a basketball player, don't look away from the hoop as quick. Or if you're a football player, keep your head down or to the side, or hold your block longer. It's always little tweaks. So that's where, as we're now in September, I want to focus on what little tweaks can we help you with to go ahead and help you improve your business for the balance of the year. And right now, what I want to do is we want to focus on the non-performing note space. That's what the Tuesday call is focused on. That's what we spend a lot of time on Thursdays with, and kind of go, all right, if I want to invest in a non-performing note, why do I want to do it? Typically, the answer is because you can buy non-performing notes at a deeper discount than you can performing notes, and so there's more profit potential. The other thing is there is a different level of skill needed to work in the non-performing note space, and typically what we find is people who don't commit themselves to being in a system, who aren't open to learning and be coached, a lot of times they'll try to go out and buy a non-performing note, they buy it, and then it becomes a train wreck because they don't know what to do with it. And so the non-performing note space is kind of less cluttered because it's a more specialized business, and it's a business where education, expertise, and knowing where to go to get your problem solvers, your vendors, your third-party service providers is more critical because you've got time. And in the world of non-performing notes, you want to be focused on how do I come to resolution as quickly as possible. So let's go ahead and go to the last slide, and then we'll go ahead and we'll get to our exercise.
Okay, which slide was the next one you wanted to see?
Three, just slide three.
The one with the six pie.
Yep, just the pie. Show me the pie. All right. What I want you to do tonight, guys, and this slide is on the archives. So what I want you to do is I want you to look at how big, there you go, you're moving it already, good for you. I want you to look at what are my non-performing note opportunities for the balance of the year in the low price band. It's a pretty big market. We've got inventory right now to work with, and by implementing now over the next 30, 45 days, what you're going to do is you are going to be in a situation where going into the first quarter of 2018, maybe the second quarter of 2018, you've got an asset that you can then go ahead and use some of these other niches where if you end up going REO, you can turn it into a turnkey, or you can sell it as a retail on seller finance, or you can sell it as is for cash. So again, I want you guys to go back and kind of go, okay, the non-performing niche, 2017, I've got 3 months left, what can I do with it? So, all right, that's it. I just wanted to kind of whip through those. I just want everybody to kind of take those. Me, I actually printed this slide out. I've got it taped over my desk because it's a reminder, and I've got the mind maps. All right, let's go to Notes Direct. All right, guys. We had a student write in and say, hey, I want to buy a non-performing note. It's getting toward the end of the year. I haven't done it yet. My budget is $40,000, and I'm just, I don't know where to start. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and we're going to go over, just filter notes direct and non-performing, hit search. And we are agnostic. So we are state agnostic right now. So what we're going to do is we're just going to go simply by price point. So if you scroll down, we can go ahead and just by process of elimination, we're going to look at prices. So we've got an asset at $28,000, we've got an asset at $5,500, we've got another asset at $12,000, we've got one at $27,000, we've got one at $21,000, we've got one at $18,000. So at this point, just on the first page of Notes Direct, are there assets where just on the first filter would be candidates as a possible non-performing note purchase? And the answer is what? Yes, because we know there, so far we haven't seen anything went over $27,000. All right. And I have no idea where Ebro, Florida is, but we'll just remove Florida for right now. We've got South Carolina, we've got New York, we've got Kentucky, more Kentucky.
Ohio, I think we had Florida.
Yep, we've got Ohio. Okay. Our next thing is we can go, okay, do we want to filter these and go, okay, if they're not in a hardest hit fund state, is it something I may not want to look at? Well, Kentucky's got hardest hit fund states, Ohio's got it, Illinois's got it. Let's see, any Indiana assets on the first page? And we can, let's see, okay, so Ohio, Delaware, PA, okay. So we've got assets here that are hardest hit funds assets. So,
Is Kentucky one?
Kentucky is a hardest hit fund state.
There's three in Kentucky, one in Tennessee.
Okay. All right, for no other reason other than it's, I just got something from Amazon saying it's Bourbon Heritage Week or something. let's pick Kentucky assets. So okay. Let's just go ahead and we're just going to pick a Kentucky asset. And I'll tell you what, let's just work. Let's try to stay. Let's see.
Madison. That's 25. You want to stay under that?
You know what? Let's do this. Let's just, for the heck of it, because again, this is kind of, everybody can weigh in this, but let's think city for the heck of it. What do we got? We got anything in Louisville? Jeffersonville? Let's go.
I thought there was a Louisville. Bowling Green, Louisville. Here's a Louisville.
Okay. So we've got Louisville, which is obviously Louisville, the second biggest city in Kentucky, I believe. You got Bowling Green, where they make the Corvettes. Let's go Louisville.
Let's go Louisville.
All right. So Alan plugged in a question right away, which is, if the budget is 40, what is the budget for legal and rehab? Alan, that's a great question. We're doing this live with you, so our answer right now is we don't know yet. Okay. What we can do is let's go ahead and let's put a range in for what we think the most immediate expense would be, which is, if this is a non-performing note, we're going to go, and I'll tell you what, buddy, play along with me here. You're going to be my guy for this. So you're going to be the student that said, hey, I haven't bought a non-performing note yet. Let's look at strategies. If you were going to buy a non-performing note this year, would your strategy be to create a re-performing note, or would you go ahead and take it through foreclosure and end up with the real estate?
I would leave them all open as far as a modification, a hardest hit funds modification through foreclosure.
Just okay. Go through, so the then step. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and, all right, so let's just go ahead and do kind of the, let's work through what would be, I'm going to call it the quickest and best result, which would be to go ahead and get it re-performed and get it modified. So here, Alan, what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and we're going to budget some legal, and in that budget, we're going to assume that we're going to be targeting to get it re-performing, may go through modification, may go through forbearance, et cetera, et cetera. And if that doesn't work, any of the funds we've used to try to accomplish that task are all, you know, that's all part of the investment in the foreclosure process anyway. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to use $3,000. So, Buddy, are you okay with that? We're going to say, hey, we're going to buy this, and we're figuring the legal is probably going to be about $3,000.
Okay, I'm good with that.
Okay. All right. And so how much is this asset? It's what, $27,000?
I can't see the top.
Oh. Susan, what do we got?
Sorry, $27,306.
Okay. All right, and then if we figure it's going to be about 3,000, so what that means is right there with what we know, our anticipated budget right now is about 30,000. So that would leave us about 10,000 for an anticipated repair budget, all right? So now let's go back and let's look at the BPO first, if that's okay with everybody. Buddy, you are my note investor. So you're looking at this as a possible target because it's not performing and the end game may be that you're going to end up with a collateral. Are you okay starting with the BPO?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. So the first thing we want to look at is kind of what the BPO is telling us in terms of prices. So we've got kind of a range of about 66,000 if we did a quick sale. 76,000 if we had some repairs done to it, and then 71,000. So at this point, Buddy, based on this BPO, what do you think the value of this property is, just based on those numbers?
Well, BPO is usually a little low.
Okay.
So I will say that we'll go with let's go 66,000.
Okay. And so if we just go ahead and kind of spitball that, we're right in about just a little below a 50 ITV range, so we're within the threshold there, right? Because typically with the non-performing, you're going to be in the 30 to 50% investment value threshold. All right. They're saying it doesn't look like it's in need of repairs. For anybody who likes to keep their house neat and clean, or anybody who's been a rehabber, the first thing you see is you see that like mailbox post, and I'm like, okay, $75 to fix that. So I disagree with the BPO guy, but all right, my repair budget is now $75 in. So, all right. And then what are we looking at for rent on this property? About $850, okay. All right. Susan, let's kind of scroll through this and see if there's anything in here that jumps out at us. Fair market rent, average condition. Okay. Taxes, okay. All right, and again, they're sticking with no repairs. And again, could we have somebody do a drive-by on this and kind of give us a spitball on, hey, you know, if I ended up with it, what would I need to do in terms of would I need to do any repairs on windows or paint it or anything like that? We can get that done. We'll talk about that in a minute. Let's go ahead and look at our sales. Okay, fair market. Okay, so no distressed sales.
Am I reading that right? One bedroom, one and a half bath?
Four bedroom, one bath, right? Is that right? No, like, hold on. Four rooms? No, that can't be right.
It says four bedroom, one bath.
Okay, because
it says four rooms, one bedroom, but that doesn't seem right.
Right. No, there you go. So what we're going to do is we'll look at the tax card because that's one hell of a bedroom.
Yes, it is.
And a story and a half, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we found something we want to just – we'll just data check. All right.
Most of the comps are three bedrooms, four bedroom, yeah. Two bedroom.
Yep. So we'll double check that. All right. So we red flagged that. All right. Good catch. All right. Is there anything else?
Nope.
Yeah. Okay. And here, too, you look, the mix, the two to four bedroom is kind of the mix that I'm seeing. And I don't see much difference in pricing, so in terms of square footage or anything else like that. So I kind of take that as an answer. All right, Luis. The reason I came up with 3,000 for legal is typically on average foreclosure is about $3,000. Can you get it done cheaper? Yep. Some states it may cost a little bit more, but for right now, Buddy's kind of driving this as he is the investor, and that's what he has put a budget in, but then also based on doing lots and lots and lots of these, 3,000 is a pretty safe number. Okay. All right. I like the comp photos. Okay. Let's go out to Trulia, if that's okay with you. Just Susan does a great job with the Google car. So, Buddy, I know that you have spent a lot of time learning the note business, and you're chomping at the bit to gear up more. When you're doing your due diligence, what kind of process do you use? Do you use like a top-down where you look at the collateral first, or do you work the other way and just look at the house and then go to the paperwork? So how do you like to work?
I look at the collateral first.
Okay.
Generally.
Okay. All right. So we've got a little bit of color. Got a little bit of color. What's Trulia saying in terms of, because they've added that new field where they tell you it's low, relatively low, kind of low, or not low at all. So if you scroll back up a little bit. So it's got a little bit of color in front. So, Buddy, at this point, are you going to put a fork in this deal and say I'm out, or are you going to go, okay, you know what, based on what I see so far, I still want to keep going?
No, I would not be out yet.
Okay.
A little bit of color doesn't bother me.
All right.
Truly is saying that it is a one bedroom also.
Really?
Huh.
All right, so we're going to check the tax card. Okay, so because it's a one bedroom, and again, guys, this is the fun part. We kind of took this and picked one out. So how else could we verify this? Because me, I'm skeptical that it's a one bedroom, but I'm also prepared to be wrong. Because a one bedroom house is just a real, you know, once the early settlers, you know, overbuilt, they started building two and three bedrooms. So we'll play with
I
that.
I doubt it with a story and a half that it's a one bedroom too. It's I probably
know. The yeah, we'll
go to, so long they haven't got the tax people in there.
Yeah. And one of the things we can do is we'll look at the tax card. All right. Let's see. All right.
Now, Kevin, to be honest with you, the one bedroom would bother me more than the Crown, to be honest with you.
Perfect. All right, perfect. And so, Buddy, talk about that. Why would that, in your mind, why would that be a bigger issue?
Just limits the options there as far as whether you're going to turnkey it and rent it out or okay. What you're going to do with it.
All right. So here, just by kind of going through the asset, you're now looking at, okay, hey, I may have found a red flag. All right. So let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and let's look at the Susan. Let's look at the O&E report and see if it's got a tax card in there. All right. So the good news is, if we wanted to kind of put a placeholder in this deal because it's a one bedroom, we know that we could verify this without having to spend a lot of time and a lot of money to double check it. All right, so the next thing we're doing is let's go ahead and let's really look at this in terms of, all right, is there anything else in here? So is there anything on the borrower side or on the tax side that would possibly make this a deal killer? All right.
So he bought this originally in 1976.
Wow. Trustees of the Shawnee Presbyterian Church, okay. I'm thinking the church got a house and they sold it. Hmm. All right, so he's been in this house for 40 years. Is that right?
Looks like he got married to Mary somewhere along the way.
Holy smokes. Yep. All right. Okay, so open mortgages. Let's see what we got here. 20-year mortgage, okay. Original was 63. All right, so we've got a 20-year amort. All right, so now there, what I'm doing is I'm writing down the fact that if his original loan was done in 2003 and it was done as a 20-year, does that give me some options in terms of a possible modification or doing a forbearance agreement? Because just by changing his amortization, could we lower his payment? So again, I'm working through my strategies as I'm looking at things.
Good point. Okay.
Yep. All right, let's look down and see if we got any scratches and dents on our borrower. All right, so what do you got? Okay, we got. Okay, we got a. All right, and let's see. How much? What are we looking at? 300. All right, so about $500.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, so here what I'm going to do is, because it says municipal lien, in every municipality is a little bit different. Municipal liens can sometimes be what I call sticky. So I'm going to put $500 in my budget where if I got to foreclose on this property, I may end up paying those liens. And obviously, the first thing you do, you want to negotiate them down. But I'm just going to put $500 in there. So right now, we're still at about $30,500. Okay, anything else? Taxes, what are we looking at? Those all look okay? All right. Would you kick yourself out of this deal because of taxes? Is that right? $178 a year.
Right, but the BPO said taxes were 506.
Yeah, BPO okay. Had it just over 500.
Yep. Beautiful. So what we'll do is we'll verify that. And again, if they were 500 versus 200, are we still okay?
We're still okay, and that does indicate they're paid, correct?
Let's see. That's what I'm looking at.
December.
Yep. Right. And again, there, here it's the same situation where you go, okay, is there a way to go ahead and verify that, you know, ourselves? Yep. Okay, let me see. Homestead, what are they saying?
So it was $178.98 paid on 12/2/2016. So he may have some sort of senior exemption.
Maybe.
It's got a homestead exemption.
Right. Yep. All right. Let's scroll down and see if there's a print. A lot of times they'll have it where they'll let you know how big it is. Taxmaster. Okay. Keep going. All right. It's not in there. Okay. Okay. So with the all right from the church. All right. So with this property at this point, it's I want to go ahead. And I want to check how many bedrooms are in this house. Because potentially that is Buddy's deal killer. All right. So, Buddy, so far, where are we? We're at about $30,500 in what we would believe would be reasonable expenses, right? And then that would leave us, what, about $8,000 if we had to do some rehab on it?
Yes.
And all you'd end up with $40,000. All right. So for the heck of it, Susan, do me a favor. Pop up the NOI calculator.
Okay.
Please.
And that's where the one bedroom would probably be a little limiting because I just can't believe it. One bedroom.
Well, and this is where, right, and this is where, you always go back. I mean, it's a two-story. My guess is this is actually a three or four bedroom property.
I would bet it's a three.
You're betting a three?
Mm-hmm. Probably have four rooms on the first floor. That's what they were counting in the old days, with one of those being a bedroom, and then you probably have two upstairs.
All right. Is it street or avenue?
Street.
I'm off
street.
Wandering. Good. All right. Because our friend Netter could also solve this for us as well, because we could go in and look. Yep. see, Redfin. Where we got single family, one bed, bath and a half, Zillow. Okay, they're saying zero pictures built in 47. You know, this one might be a fun one to play with. All right. So with the NOI calculator, Susan, let's go ahead. They're saying the rent would be $850.
Mm-hmm.
I am a pragmatic person. Let's go to Rent-A-Meter just for the heck of it. Just throw a number in. Because I got to think everybody on the call is kind of going, one bedroom, $850. Louisville, maybe. All right, 126. So, 44, 3.
I think the most surprising thing in this deal would be if we found that it was actually a one bedroom.
Right. I would say that would be a surprising thing. Okay, and I'm just going to filter for houses.
If it's a one bedroom, they're saying 584.
Yeah, and I'm just.
But I imagine it's a two or three.
Yep. So what I did is I filtered it for houses only and 706 for the average.
Okay.
So 700. So median is 600. Here's what we're going to do. I'm showing medians at 600. I'm showing average 700. Let's run the numbers at 650. Buddy, are you okay with that?
Sounds fair.
Okay, because you can change them.
I'm just going to be really surprised if this turns out being a one bedroom.
Right. You're my audience participant. I'm
going to be completely surprised. But let's go 43 on taxes, because I think that was the 509 or 506, was it? 509?
Well, he was only paying 178 or 187, I think, is what he paid.
Right.
But we'll leave it there.
Okay.
Kevin, how much for insurance?
On this, I'd be very comfortable with $35 a month. All right. Janet, you're weighing in where you're thinking there's a typo, autofill, work. Yep. I mean, guys, this is fun. This is where we just took an asset, kind of blind filled it, and said, here, let's.
Ask me how I know. I know how Janet knows.
Yeah. Tarzan know where Tarzan go. All right.
Alan's saying the BPO shows four bedroom multi bath. No, the BPO shows four rooms, one bedroom,
right.
One bath.
Yep. Here's good news. A bunch of us are all going to go racing off this. And all right. So in terms of a rental at about $650 a month, selling this somewhere, I mean, typically you're going to sell in probably the 8 to 11 range. With this, could you get high 50s for this?
Yeah.
Mid 50s? Yeah. Okay. All right. So here's what we've done, guys. We've actually just gone to Notes Direct and using a number, 40,000. We went in, we looked at assets that just based on acquisition costs from the no purchase would fit in. We then just kind of sorted through and said, okay, let's look at hardest hit fun states, Ohio, Kentucky, etc. And we just took the dart and threw it at the dartboard and said, okay, let's go Kentucky because they are in the hardest hit fun state. This is a note mortgage. And then we said, you know what? Instead of going to Bowling Green or Barbersville or whatever, let's just go to Louisville because, you know, it's smack dab. I mean, this property, man, this cannot be that far from the racetrack on 44th or the university, I don't think. And we've kind of built out the strategy. Now what we've done, in the process of about 22, 23 minutes, we found out what our potential deal killer may be on this. And that potential deal killer is this truly a one-bedroom house? All right. We also built our budget out where we said, all right, 27 for the note, let's assume 3,000 for legal. Let's assume the muni liens, which we'll go ahead and put a cushion in, 500 bucks. So right now, all in, we'd be at less than 31,000. That would leave us about a $9,000 budget. And at this point, you'd go, is $9,000 enough? The answer is, it could be. Could I go and brighten the outside of this house up and then maybe pop a new kitchen in it and clean up a bathroom for $9,000? Based on what I'm seeing, I could. So, buddy, if you were the person saying, hey, I've got $40,000 to spend on this, would this be an asset you would put in your follow-up list?
Yes, I'd put this in the follow-up list. But I'm going to throw a new twist on you at the last minute. I do see a
hit me
Kentucky certificate of death when I'm looking through the mod. There was already a modification, so that'll be interesting to see.
How old is that modification?
Modification looks like it was
2012.
11/12. Yep, November 2012.
And who was the mod done by?
Oh, I got it. All right, Susan's got it up. I'm going to scroll back up.
It is really bad.
It is a bad copy. It cleans up later, but.
It looks like City did it, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I'm looking for here, though, is, remember, there are multiple types of modifications, and what I'm looking for is, was it done by the lender as a HAMP or a non-HAMP? And because this modification was done in 2012, would that inhibit the ability to use the Kentucky Hardest Hit Funds Program? And then at the end of the day, as I've got those answers, I still, as a lender, could you still do a loan modification on outside of trying to do hardest hit funds? The answer would be yes. So again, there, buddy, not a twist. That's now going into the paperwork and going, all right, what do I have to work with this deal?
Yeah, but so, it looks like it was done.
And then,
Mary's name.
Okay. Yeah, I'm from the paperwork, and I'd have to go back and look at it. I think this was done as a non-HAMP, which gives you a little more latitude. I know we're running a little over on time. Bob Bollinger put a very, very good question, which is, okay, the house is close to the river, you know, given the flooding and Irma and Jose and whoever else is bombarding Texas and all the other southern states. Bob, there's a very, very handy website where you can actually go in and determine if a house is in a flood zone. So, Susan, do you know how to get to that fabulous website?
Are you talking about the FEMA.gov website?
Susan, it's almost as if that rolled off the tip of your tongue.
Yeah, I've used this website, and not if it's the one I think it is, I've seen some errors, but.
I'm going to tell you that there is no 100% perfect flood map. But Bob, what this does is this will give you, basically, you can kind of put your zip code in and everything, and it'll let you know with a quick snapshot, and then there's better ways. And actually, look, you're using one I haven't seen. So,
let's just do this.
Let me see which one you're looking at.
There it is.
Yep, Connie, you're right. A lot of the county sites now are tied right into it. Yeah, and all you got to do is just go ahead and pop in your address. What is it, 126 South 44th?
Yeah,
All right, so let's see, it's on a, let's see, what app is it showing?
Not showing anything.
Okay. All right, and guys, we're showing you a free tool that you can use. You can also get, there are vendors that you can get a paid flood certification, flood cert. They range anywhere from $8 to $35, depending on who does them. All right. Okay. So, guys, thank you for walking through this exercise. The conclusion on this is perfect. The conclusion is, yep, if you haven't accomplished your goals in terms of buying a non-performing note and you want to do it by the end of the year, then do exactly what we just did. Take the money you've got to work with, go in the Notes Direct, and find a note, start doing your due diligence, and then bring it on the call, reach out to content, and we'll help you with this. And, buddy, I'm going to put you on the task of getting an accurate bedroom count because I'm just counting the windows. I'm just sitting going, there's got to be more. So, all right.
I think it's a case you're not going to get an accurate bedroom count because he's been in the house so long that he's probably added bedrooms and finished it, and he never told his county or city because he doesn't want to pay more taxes.
All right. So, Susan, I'll let you take us home on the case study competition and the importance of it, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll go from there.
Note Expo is coming up. We've talked about it repeatedly. Case study competition, we need you guys to start putting your case studies in. They will work with you to help you create your PowerPoint, but we need to start getting them so we can start working through them. You know, this is Kevin Shortell's baby, and so he wants to start getting people to get him in. So, you know, he had 80 honorable mentions last year. So that was quite a few case studies. And he doesn't really want to wait till the last minute. So go ahead and do that. And then, again, we have our update coming three-day classes. They have not posted anything new yet. And one more titanium coming up here in less than 2 weeks. So I don't know where they stand. But if you guys are interested in that, talk to Debbie at Colonial Funding. And she will hook you up.
All right. All right, guys. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Great questions coming off the board tonight. Susan, buddy, thanks for the help. Buddy, thanks for being my audience participant. And we're all looking forward to how many damn bedrooms there's in that house.
We will try to find out. Thank you, Kevin. A lot of fun.
See you guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.